Come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter. Weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to fandom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going great, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
Cool. So who do we have on tonight?
Tonight, we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by actor, writer, creator, Jermaine Williams. Jermaine has starred in such films as Fat Albert, Stomp the Yard, and The Great Debaters. He's been called one of the best kept secrets in Hollywood, and we're super excited to talk to him tonight. Jermaine, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Hey, what website gave me that introduction? The best kept secret ever? Okay. I'll take it. I'll take it. I'll definitely run with it. I love it.
Yeah, and you've been in the industry for so long and all. Like, you've been in a bunch of really cool things and worked with a bunch of really awesome talent and all. So we're really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely a veteran in the industry, man. And you know, there's nothing I love doing more, man. And you know, just entertaining and making whatever character I play believable, man. That's what it's all about.
So you've been doing this for about 20 years. Like, how did you get your start?
Oh man, long story short, man. I definitely got to give credit to my parents and my sister, my older sister. I got a sister named Keisha that's 10 years older than me. And when I was a kid, she noticed that I would just stay glued to the TV. You know, I grew up watching Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, Will Smith, all the classic
heavy hitters. Yeah.
Yeah. Heavy hitters, young black comedians, you know, in the market. And I just wanted to be just like them and laugh and make people laugh just like that. And my sister saw that in me. One day we was riding in the car and we heard like advertisement about, you know, making your kids into a star. You know, initially my parents thought it was like a scam, but they went with it anyway.
Definitely sounds like it. Yeah.
Went to the Beverly Hills Hilton and it was like 1,000 kids up there who all heard the same commercial. It was put on by this company called Beverly Hills Studios, but I don't think they exist anymore. They're the reason I was even able to get my start. Went through like a 6 to 8 month acting workshop. And then initially we did pretty much a casting call for all the top agencies in the business that was in LA. And I was able to get picked up by Armatruda Benson and Associates, who I am still represented by this till this day.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
That's how I kind of started. Yeah.
What was it like going through that first experience? Like, did you feel right at home or did you know that that's what you wanted to do when you started out?
Not really, man. I just knew I was just kind of like a fun, open-minded kid. You know what I mean? I definitely love doing drama and reenacting my favorite movies. I grew up on movies like Last Dragon that was produced by Barry Gordy. And as a kid, I would literally reenact the last fight scene between, you know, Show Enough, Bruce Leroy, you know what I'm saying? And if I couldn't get a neighbor to do it with me, I used to ask my sister to play Show Enough because I always wanted to be the good guy and Bruce Leroy and play Bruce Leroy. So I was a fat, chubby kid who was Bruce Leroy beating up my sister. So all that I wanted to do was just kind of get in front of a camera to see if I was able to do it and dibble and dabble with it. Once I was able to get my full body into it, caught the bug, and I was addicted to it ever since then.
So you said you did 8 months of like an acting school, like after you got signed on. What was that like? Like, what was some of the stuff they were teaching you?
Just about dialect, how to speak, okay, how to talk. That was in the 90s, which is weird because I grew up in an era of just token black folks in white shows or commercials.
Yeah.
I mean, it was different for me because at the time I wasn't sure exactly what it was. It just felt different. And I saw, like, I guess you can call them acting teachers, sometimes treating the white kids different from the black kids over there because we had a different dialect. I guess it was for the best because that's exactly what I guess what productions were looking for. They were looking for people to speak well. Lucky enough, as times changed, I'm glad that more productions are open to certain dialects, especially if it comes from a black hood area. You know, yeah, they want to just hear you speak natural. And I've heard this a bunch of times from multiple directors. You know, sometimes I'll go into a job and because it's a commercial, I just know they want me to speak a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do it maybe a couple of takes, or I'll do it in rehearsal. And the director will be like, hey, man, just be yourself. Talk. I'm like, I don't know. And it's weird because I feel like certain Black people going into situations like that, we automatically have a mindset to speak a certain way to make sure people understand us. You know, I grew up in an era, my first biggest thing was the Disney Channel. I was on a jersey called the Disney Channel. And they were very finicky about that. Like, they really wanted you to pronounce your INGs and make sure you say ask instead of ax, you know? So that was a big thing growing up. And it kind of just stuck to me. So I knew, depending on the tone of whatever show or commercial that I was on, how to speak a certain way and how not, or if I could speak how I speak. It was one of those things. I still get teased, even by my dad. He'll see me in a commercial. He'd be like, hey, man, sure glad we took you to those white schools, huh? He'll, you know, I went to school on the west side of town in L.A. My mom and dad were big on that. They're really big on me just being cultured.
Okay.
Being around, you know, not just all Black kids, but they wanted me to be around different people. It helped. It definitely did. You know what I'm saying? I can tell a difference between certain friends I have, even a couple of family members, that when they are around different cultures, they're kind of shunned. They don't really know how to approach or talk to certain people.
They don't feel like they belong.
They don't feel like they're comfortable. I'm glad, you know, my parents were open to that and caught heed of that to make me feel comfortable in certain situations. So if I'm around different people, I can always just open up dialogue and just chit chat and feel comfortable with it.
Probably been a huge boon in Hollywood, huh?
Yeah. It is what it is, man. That's the culture we live in, especially in LA, man, for sure.
Now, did you have issues with like your family members or like old friends, like when you started like talking a certain way, or it's like looking at you like kind of like, who are you? Do you ever have those kind of problems?
Well, I don't know. It was crazy. I've been considered to certain people, I guess they call them Oreo sometimes. But it's like I'm able to speak a certain way, but I'm able to speak how I speak because I know where I'm from. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If I'm around my people, I know how to speak to my people. If I'm around a certain group of people that may be a little bit more, I guess, high class, or I don't know. I know how to speak in those group of people as well, you know? So I don't think it was a problem. Mm-hmm. I did get a couple of side eyes and maybe a couple of comments, but it was nothing to the point where they shunned me. You know what I mean? I have family that still love me nonetheless. Mm-hmm. I did have a cousin, and it kind of took me aback. He felt like I was Hollywood. You know, you have a thing, like a title when you call it Hollywood, where I guess you feel like you may be better. And that's never been my stilo at all. That's not my style. You know what I mean? Same cousin. I get my hair cut from the same cousin so I can put money in his pocket and support him. You know what I'm saying? Because he knows how to cut hair. You know, at the end of the day, you know, people have different mindsets of how they feel and how they think and how they look at you. And sometimes it can easily be fixed with a simple conversation.
So you've been able to remain humble throughout all your success.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if anybody says different, I want to talk to that person.
I've heard some things, you know.
Yeah. I want all the smoke. Whatever you've heard outside of me being humble, let's talk about it real quick. Let's see your proven points.
And have you ever felt like an outsider though? Like going back, like those other cultures, like have you ever felt like an outsider? Or were you just able to like flip back and forth without really a problem?
I've not in the sense of just culture wise. I've felt like an outsider just because of people, mm-hmm. people in general. I've been forced to be turned introvert, unfortunately, and I'm I consider myself a people person, but because I've been burned so many times by folks, I'm very careful with, you know, what kind of energy I deal with, who I deal with. And that's because of just past relationships that I've been in, mm-hmm. you know, so I watch people, I watch their character, I watch their movements, how they move. I go off of vibes. And if I vibe with you, then I mess with you. If not, then it is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
I've been able to, and God bless, I've been able to work with a lot of successful people that I admire and respect their work ethics mm-hmm. in this industry. I've tried to keep in touch, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I'm never the one to ride on anyone's coattails. So if I reach out and I feel like I'm the only person reaching out, then that stops. Like after like three or four calls and I don't get the same reciprocating back, I really don't really deal with them anymore. And vice versa, you know what I mean? If you mess with me, I mess with you. Basically that, simple as that. So I feel like a outsider because I maybe feel like I wish I had more friends in the industry like that. But then again, you know, I don't force myself on people either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is what it is. I'm a firm believer in building yourself and not really depending on anybody else for your success. You got to do it for yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And do you have any family members that are in the industry at all, or are you just the only one?
I'm pretty much the only one, man. Okay. You know, nobody that's, I have a cousin that's really wanting to do it. And I think she kind of gets in her own way, and she's extremely talented. Mm-hmm. She gets in her own way. I don't know what it is. It may be insecurity. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Is she younger or like closer to your age?
She's a few years younger than me.
Okay.
But in this industry, you can start at any age. Man, one of the old ancestors, I think that was in Black Panther. She just recently passed away.
Yeah.
Got her first job at like 80 some years old.
Oh man.
You know what I'm saying? And that's hopefully crazy. I mean, sadly enough, she didn't live long enough to be in the second one. But I mean, that just lets you know that your dreams can come true at any age when it comes to this industry.
Yeah, especially like that being her first movie. That's so like impactful. That's awesome.
That's impactful, yeah. Man. You know what I mean? And I can only imagine the joy she felt knowing that she booked the job. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Sure. That movie changed so many lives. Yeah.
Do you see something with like young actors? Is there kind of a common thing that gets in the way of their success that you see across the industry?
You know, I feel arrogance can play a big part. You definitely, in this industry, you can definitely put your foot in your mouth.
Especially with the internet.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people, and it doesn't matter, and not even with young age, I just feel like with just in people in general, even if you're already successful, and this happened to many of people, I feel like a lot of successful people feel like they're untouchable.
Yeah.
And that's no good way to live, you know, because no matter how much you've gotten away with, it could just take one more time and it'll be that one situation that'll really just screw your whole career over.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things, like they might not catch you right away, but it might be years later they catch you. And it's just.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess whatever nastiness you into, whatever your kinks are, you know what I'm saying?
Don't tell the internet.
I'm guessing you thinking the second party will probably be quiet about your shit. But at the end of the day, somebody going to pretty much rat on you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Somebody going to be like, hey, man, he like getting his booty hole lit, you know, and then like your whole career can be just turned upside down. You just never know. Yeah, man, you got to keep that discreet, man.
Yeah,
trust the people you're dealing with. You know what I mean? You got to just trust the people you're dealing with and who you take your pants off in front of. That's how I feel.
That's good life advice.
Yeah.
Not just for actors, but like
that's for everybody.
Yeah, that's yeah. Make sure you trust whoever's licking your butt. Yeah. Anyway.
Facts. Keep your booty hole closed for real.
So I've heard that some like child actors they get kind of typecast and it's really hard for them to kind of move into a bigger roles, more serious roles. Did you find that challenging, like moving from the Jersey to what the your later roles?
I did, man, and I feel like the only reason why I was able to was because Disney Channel at that time wasn't on like a huge scale. I mean, it was shown around, but not as big as, let's say, a huge network television show. Shout out to Jaleel White, who I love and respect, but Jaleel White is a very, very talented dude. And I really wish I was able to see him in other stuff outside of Family Matters. Like, he's worked outside of Family Matters, but not to the extent where I feel like he deserved. And because his character was such world renowned, every time you see him, that's all you see. And it's unfortunate. Yeah. With me, we were limited to 3 seasons. At that time, and I don't know if Disney worked their shows the same way, but every show basically on Disney was set and contracted to do 3 full seasons. And the reason why they did that is because, you know, they feel like young people get bored of certain stuff and they wanted to see new stuff. So we were contracted to do 3 seasons. And with that being said, we had 3 successful seasons, which were fun. And then from there, I was able to venture out. And plus, at that point, I was becoming a young adult. I was like 18 when it finished, and I was able to venture out and do other stuff, which contained a little bit more mature content. And with that crossover for me to show my acting range that I, you know, that I could act outside of the Disney Channel. It was a blessing for me to be able to do that.
And do you have issues with like getting auditions and stuff and like that after the Disney Channel?
I want to probably initially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people do typecast you, especially casting, because they know where you're from and they know that you're on a set, like a certain level of act. So they want to know if you can like push that level. And what made me kind of take that crossover, I did this independent film back in, I want to say 2001, 2002, independent film where I played like this homeless kid and I was doing all this cussing and I cussed out this police officer. It was pretty rugged compared to Coleman T. Galloway on the Jersey. So with that being said, I was able to step outside, you know, my comfort zone and show my acting range and ability. And with that, I feel like a few eyes were able to see it. And then from there, it prepared me to even get deeper into auditions to play more mature characters. You know what I'm saying? To show my range. So that's how I kind of started with the transition.
When you went up for The Great Debaters, you had to audition in front of Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah.
So did you know that beforehand, before going in?
Kind of. I want to say, yeah, I did know. But it don't really hit you until you actually see him walk out the room and introduce himself. He introduced himself as if the room didn't know who he was already. He was like, everybody, I'm Denzel. And I'm like, yeah. Probably one of the scariest, most tense auditions I've ever experienced in my life. But beyond rewarding. You know, because the man himself put his arm around my shoulder and told me that I had the role. And the feeling is, I couldn't even tell you what that feeling was like, man. It was exhilarating. Like, I was on top of the world that day, man, for sure.
Was that like the biggest milestone you've had thus far in your career, do you think?
I want to say yeah to that and probably Fat Albert. Albert, because I knew the competition I was up against. I promise I felt like I auditioned against every Black person in the country. That's what I felt like. It literally was like it was like four rounds of auditions, intense auditions. And then like when you came to another one, they wanted you to do something else. And it was just strenuous of just different things that you had to kind of create and improv for yourself. And I want to say that kind of helped me on my improv game. And wanting to bring something new to the table whenever something was asked of me right on the spot.
With working with Denzel Washington, like that must have been like kind of on another level than what you'd experienced before, right?
Yeah. Prior to that, all I did was comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I just did a lot of just funny, silly.
Oh, so that was your first dramatic role, pretty much.
First dramatic role.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To date. Before that, the most serious I feel like I ever booked that was on a serious level was probably an episode of Veronica Mars.
Okay.
You know, but it wasn't as deep or heavy of a concept as The Great Debaters. And, you know, with The Great Debaters, we had to, we actually went to TSU to study literally the structure of debating. We took on one of the best debate teams as practice, which was scary as heck. You know what I mean? So it was super intense training. And it was my first period piece, too. Taking myself out of 2006 at the time, that was new for me, too. You know what I mean? So I had to just kind of change my dialect, change the world surrounding me, and kind of just be engulfed in this period piece.
What would you say is like the most important lesson you learned from that experience?
I'm going to say patience is just acting wise. I feel like Denzel, he just taught me how to be very natural when it comes to acting. He taught me how to put myself in certain situations. He goes, in this situation, how would you, Jermaine, how would you react? Think about it and then speak. Definitely one of those situations where he dropped a lot of jewels on us too, because we were all young and he just dropped a lot of jewels. He dropped a lot of jewels about life experiences and acting experiences that he had to deal with as a young Black man. And he shared the same things with us. So definitely taught me how to be patient and live in the moment with no rushing. And with that being said, I think I love doing film a little bit more than TV, because with TV, you only cut so many minutes, 30 minutes to an hour, and it's really structured. So with TV, I feel like you're kind of like a robot, like they want you to stick to the script. Whereas in film, you literally can have hour and a half, 2 hour film where they can give you options to play. And when I mean play, that means just improv and just kind of like add dialogue if you feel it. If you feel like saying something, you can say it. Of course, they'll get their two takes in where it's like just script. And then, you know, sometimes the director will let you just go off book and just kind of feel however you feel. And Denzel masters that exceptionally well. Like he'll have a full just monologue And he'll switch it up and change it up every single time, but literally is able to make the same point as the written out. Like, it's amazing. I can't even explain it. It's something that you have to see. Oh my God, this dude is freaking crazy talented. I was able to witness some just amazing stuff. And he has a mind like a sponge, you guys. It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
That must have been pretty inspiring experience.
Absolutely.
At that point in your career.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then on the flip side, like Fat Albert, you said was the other big film you did around that same time. So was that mostly improv, a lot of your lines in that, or was that still scripted?
I want to say, yeah, I actually didn't really have lines. Like they basically was also like, hey, you Mushmouth really kind of say this, but how would Mushmouth say it, basically?
Okay.
And I was able to just kind of improv the gibberish, basically. You know, so if you were to give me a sentence and I would say it, you know, Mushmouth, and hopefully it'd come off funny. You know what I'm saying? So it was fun doing that because I had a lot of kids at the time after it came out ask me, how did you do that? How did you do the gibberish or Mushmouth voice? And honestly, I was just inspired by Bill, man. You know, I feel like Bill was able to create some amazing characters out of that whole bunch. And he was the voice of Mushmouth. I went back to study a little bit of it because I was a bit too young at the time to remember the original Fat Albert. So I did go back and study it and kind of just heard what he said. And he made it a valid point to say, I don't want you guys to do exactly what you saw in the original. He said, just kind of, you know, be inspired by it and just kind of make it your own. So that's what I try to do, you know what I'm saying? And make him proud in the same act.
You also started out as a dancer as well, right?
Yeah, I did some dancing back in the day. Yeah. I danced for Brandy used to have this dance troupe called Norwood's Kids Foundation, where she would take, you know, just kids in the inner city in LA, and everybody had to audition. I did this when I was about, say, 15, 16 years old. I was chubby. My mom wanted to find me a way to lose a little weight. Like, why don't you dance? You like dancing? I was like, oh, okay. I never considered myself like a professional. You know, I always just do it for fun. Then once I got into it and they picked me as one of the male dancers, they only chose like two guys. It was me and this other guy named Jonathan. And, you know, once I got into it, I just really enjoyed doing it. And then I saw myself getting skinny and, you know, looking good. And I had ladies flirting with me. I was like, shit, I'm going to keep this dancing up. Shit, I'm going to keep doing it. So I did that, you know, with learning from some really well-known choreographers. And I've always loved dancing anyway. So I always kept up with the new dances. And that got me the role of Something Art.
Yeah.
2004. So that was fun too.
When you're doing the stepping, that was a little bit different than the dancing you've done before, right?
Absolutely, man. That was 06. I'm sorry. That was 06 I did that. I did Fat Albert in 04. 06 I did Stump the Yard. But yeah, that was another scary audition process because I didn't know how to step. I let that be known at the audition. I was like, hey, you guys, to be honest with you, I don't know how to step, but I can dance. So they popped in, I want to say, Lose Control by Missy Elliott, and I just went off. I lost control and I got the audition. So I got the job. Yeah. It was fun, though. It was really fun.
So, like, an actual dance movie like that, do they value the dancing more than the acting? Or is it the acting? Like, you still need to be, like, a really good actor.
So, I'm going to be honest with you. I want to say, and it may sound like I'm being biased. I don't care. I want to say Stump the Yard was great acting along with great dancing. Only okay. Reason why I feel like, because the storyline was a really good, positive, uplifting story, I feel. Mm-hmm. With some really decent actors in it. You know what I mean? So I feel like it balanced it out. Okay. You know, Stump the Yard, not Stump the Yard, I want to say You Got Served was the one that kind of just surged all those dance movies. You know what I'm saying? It gave birth to all the dance movies. You know, great dancing, it just, the acting just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Just being real. You know, shout out to Marion, Marcus Houston, all y'all. Y'all did y'all thing, but I think, you know, Stump the Yard was able to take it to another level. But I do respect You Got Served because they gave birth to us.
That whole genre. Yeah, that whole genre of movies. Yeah.
Gave birth to a whole genre. So definitely.
Did you guys have like any consultants from those fraternities on set? I know they were fictional fraternities, but I know they were inspired by real fraternities.
Oh, we got heat. Oh, we got some heat. We got heat by the Alphas.
Yes, that's what the Thetas were kind of based on, right? Alphas and Kappas.
Yeah, they were definitely based on the Alphas. Alphas gave us a little heat because they saw like our sign and shit was a little bit like theirs. And it was kind of like, yo, we got to be careful around these parts, man. Like, we was in Atlanta, basically, like the home of HBCU colleges, you know. So we got a little feedback, you know, from the alphas. It was like, hey, watch yourself. And the fraternities, they take things really serious, man. So you got to be careful.
Was there anybody from those frats like consulting on the choreography or inspiring the stuff?
Yes. We had a choreographer by the name of Chuck Malinado, who is a real Kappa. So he actually consulted, and we had one of the greatest hip hop choreographers in the world by the name of Dave Scott. I don't think he's frat, but he's a great choreographer. He choreographed all of You Got Served.
Okay.
And our movie as well. I think along with some of the Step Up films.
Do you still dance?
I two-step. I'm pushing 40 now, man. I got three kids, so I'm more so two-step now, man. And lucky enough, it's crazy. I did a a dance audition for this Old Navy commercial for Christmas. And I was on a veil for it. I almost got it, but I don't know why I don't think I got it. But whatever the case may be, I danced my ass off on that audition. And it'd been a while since I auditioned too and danced and like really got into it. Mm-hmm. So I was breathing hard and heavy. I am out of practice.
It's crazy when you get back into something like after you've been away from it for a long time.
Yeah, you know, but it's crazy. Like you never like lose a step. Like you got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
It's like riding a bike. Just once it happens. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, your bones may be a little bit aged. You know what I'm saying? And your lungs a little rusty. But you never lose a step. It's still there. You know what I mean? Just like I still love watching Debbie Allen dance, man. She was a beast back in the day in the 80s. She was gorgeous and she's still gorgeous, but she loves dance so much. Even watching her at her tender age of, I think she's like late 60s, 70 something. She's still beautiful watching her dance, man, just because of her passion for it.
I know you said The Great Debaters was your first like real dramatic, serious role. Would you actually prefer? Do you prefer the dramatic stuff or the comedy?
I love them equally both.
Okay.
Honestly, I was just a comedy guy at one point, mm-hmm. and then doing drama and doing but The Great Debaters, I really, really fell in love with drama after that, even to the point where I even write it. You know, I write a lot more drama. I still write comedy as well, but I'm able to do both because I have a sense and I've dove deep into both, you know, genres, and I equally love them both. So I can't say I love one more than the other one.
What do you like about the drama? Like, is it just the range of like emotions you can have, or?
I think it's just the timing, you know.
Okay.
Drama's at just a very slower pace, you know. So when somebody says something that's hurtful and it hits you in your chest, you sometimes don't have a quick response. You kind of ponder on it. Ever getting your feelings hurt, you know, and somebody says something, for example, like, have you ever just played the dozens and you guys like, joining on each other and you guys kind of like say something back and forth and all of a sudden somebody says something below the belt and it gets real quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. I always do that to Josh. Yeah. I'm like, I didn't think that you cried. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's like shot after shot after shot after shot. And then somebody just brings the tomahawk and then you just kind of like, hey, baby, why'd you? That's drama.
Yeah.
That's drama. You have to kind of let those feelings and emotions set. Whereas comedy is just real quick. Comedy is at a faster pace, especially when you have to improv and you kind of like going up against just really funny people. You got to be quick on your feet. You know, whether it's a reaction of the face, a movement, or just a line back to the other character. It has to be really quick in timing. So.
And like you said, like Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence, like they inspired you early as like comedic roles. Who was inspiring you for like your dramatic stuff? Who are you trying to replicate?
So I'm a huge fan of Denzel for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that I feel is a dramatic beast is Jeffrey Wright.
Okay.
Love Jeffrey Wright. Joe Morton, definitely a beast. There's quite a few, man. I love watching Tom Hanks. Love Tom Hanks, man. Even Brad Pitt. You know what I mean? Tom Hardy is good. Like watching Tom Hardy in dramatic stuff. You know?
Yeah, too.
Tom Cruise. I don't know what it is about Tom Cruise. I don't even think it's like Tom Cruise is...
He's not human.
No. You know what it is? It's his intensity.
Yeah. It's definitely intense.
I don't know what it is. Like, have you ever seen World of the Worlds? I don't know if you remember. Like, it was that hill and like the spaceship was coming. On the hill or whatever, and it was his look up to the hill, And honestly, when you're acting, he's not looking at anything, but he makes you believe that he sees this big ass space for the hill. And you're like, man, what is it? And he's kind of like, well, show it. I want to see what he's looking at. Because it looks big as hell. It looks scary. But his intensity in his face is ridiculous, man. I like watching his, I love his dramatic reactions to stuff. Tom Cruise, but definitely Joe Morton. Joe Morton and Jeffrey Wright, I feel like, extremely underrated actors. And they've been doing this since, Joe Morton been doing this since the 70s. I think my favorite, let me see, I think my favorite Joe Morton scene, well, not my favorite scene, but it's the most memorable, was him dying in Terminator.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You remember he died in Terminator 2? Mm-hmm. And he had that bomb sitting on him?
Yeah, when he's just holding the trigger. Yeah.
I'm like, bro, he's like, he about to die, like, for real. He got shot in the stomach. That's like the most, that's one of the most memorable scenes for me. I don't know why. Yeah.
That whole movie was dynamite, though. Oh, man.
Classic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Since you started writing, like, how has that, like, helped make you a better actor?
It I don't know if it makes me a better actor, but it definitely allows me to write things that I want to see on TV that I feel aren't being seen. I like to write all original content, which is crazy because I feel like a lot of networks and productions play it safe by rebooting a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe play because I guess they feel like, you know, things that have already been made already have a huge fan base. So maybe they can keep that huge fan base and that's money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
That don't always work, though. You can't really top a classic. You should just kind of leave it alone.
Yeah, you shouldn't try and top it. Just let it be.
Just leave it alone, man. I'll be honest with you, man. Yeah, I feel like it allows me to write original content that I would like to see on TV. So I love writing. I mean, I get writer's block all the time sometimes, but, you know, usually when I'm inspired by something, the gates kind of open back up.
And how did the writing start? Like, did you just start writing your own lines one day or?
No, man, I'll be honest with you, man. I stopped booking shit.
Okay.
You stop booking stuff and you realize you're still in love with the art. You're still in love with drama and comedy and you want to build something for yourself. So I got to the point where, you know, I'm not going to leave my fate in the hands of people that'll give me a call and say, you have an audition. I'll create something myself and I can have the opportunity to put myself in front of the camera or stay behind the camera. You know what I mean? So it's about building foundation and building something yourself, which pretty much forces people to respect you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you can write and create something amazing and get people to respect you, those same people who didn't want to hire you before kind of see you as another threat now. That's awesome.
It's awesome to take control, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's basically what it's about, man. I definitely, you know, look up to people like Issa Rae, Ryan Coogler, because they're from my neck of the woods and was able to get out and make something successful. But at the same time, they still respect where they came from. They show love from where they came from and they love their people.
Issa Rae, like she got her start like making her own web series, right?
Awkward Black Girl.
So that's how she got out. Yeah.
Yeah. Awkward Black Girl. And that was funny. And she was able to, who was that she hooked up with? She hooked up with, he's a comedian, but she hooked up with him.
Larry
Wilmore. Yeah. He was able to kind of get her started.
Yep.
Yeah. It was able to hook her up with Insecure. And that's how she kind of got started. So she's an inspiration for real. I was able to do an episode of Insecure myself.
Yeah.
And just saw how that production set was run was inspiring because I just saw a lot of my people working in departments and in areas that I usually don't see them working in, which was amazing to see. She just gives people opportunities. Very cool, sweet, humble set that just kind of encourage you to be the best that you can be, honestly.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's great to hear, man.
Do you do any directing work or you just stick to writing and acting?
No, I'm very open to it. Very open to it, but I've never directed, man. I've been just kind of writing and getting these ideas out.
Okay.
So is there anything you're working on right now that you want to talk about?
Yeah, man. I'm getting my feet wet in the producing side of things. I am actually producing a short film called Welcome, with a partner of mine who is a writer director named Dreka Armstrong. We just cast it for the short film, and we plan on shooting it early January of next year. And I'm really excited about it. It's definitely a social injustice piece with a twist. Definitely not promoting Black death by any means, but definitely shedding a light and turning the mirror to the people that are very closed-minded and not so open. Yeah, very closed-minded and very naive to Black people's plight in this country. You should call welcome and look for it.
Yeah, definitely, man. Look forward to seeing that.
You did mention you have three kids. How's it like working in the industry with like children? Like, has it been like a struggle for you, or is it pretty great?
No, man. Yeah. They encourage me. It's crazy you mentioned that. My son is actually going to be Mushmouth this following.
Oh yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
I didn't force it at all. Like, you know, it's one of the situations where he's usually want to be Miles Morales or Captain America, Spider-Man, or something like that.
Yeah.
I showed him Fat Albert for the first time maybe a year ago.
Okay.
He kept watching it and he was like, "Hey, Dad, I want to be you following." I said, "What you mean?" He was like, "You know, Mushmouth." And I was like, "For real?" I was like, "Okay." So with him being Mushmouth, I'm actually going to be Fat Albert. My mom is going to be Dumb Donald. I think the whole family's getting in on it. My sister's going to play Bucky. So it's going to be a whole family thing for Halloween, man. And we're going to take pictures and have a good time. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Really cool.
You know what I'm saying? But no, having kids is amazing, man. They encourage me. They're the ones that inspired me to keep pushing on and booking stuff and writing stuff. Because at the end of the day, I'm not supporting myself anymore. I'm supporting my family. So I love doing it for them and getting us to a financial place where we are extremely stable and comfortable. And I just want to make them proud at the end of the day.
It's hard. Like, I would imagine that lifestyle is kind of hard and all, because like there are times like you don't like going on set and you have those long days and all that. Like, it has to be really hard. I can't imagine doing that with my kids.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. At the end of the day, the kids got to understand. I mean, honestly, yeah. At the end of the day, it's like any father that's working a regular job too. My son says it every night. He'd be like, "Dad, you going to work tonight?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Call off, man. Just call off." I say, "Son, I can't do it, man." I
said, "Doesn't work that way, dude."
"It don't work that way, son." I'm like, "Hey, look." I said, "You like this bed you're sleeping in, don't you? You like these lights you cut on in the room?" Like my son, he eats a lot. I'm like, "You like to eat, don't you? Hey, we got to keep on eating, son. So I got to get to work.
I'm sure it's good for him to see your work ethic too.
Absolutely, man. And you know, at the end of the day, I just want to be a good example, you know, just to kind of show my kids not to be lazy. And I'm trying to encourage them to find interest in things now at an early age. My son is 6, my daughter is 11, and I have one on the way.
Oh.
Yeah, I have one on the way. She's due December 18th.
Oh, my daughter is due end of November.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations, man. Is your first child?
Oh, my second. My son's second. 2.5. So
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, man, I have one due December 18th. I just want a healthy baby girl. She's a baby girl. So I just want her to be healthy.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were really big in the comedy. You never did like stand up or anything like that, or anything like
bucket list. Definitely a bucket list, man. I'm actually writing a series right now based on stand up comedy. Like I said, I am a huge fan of Richard Pryor and Dave Chappelle and
the heavy hitters.
At one point, man, I was going to Laugh Factory Chocolate Sundays on Sunset almost every Sunday, just checking out the vibes and everything. So I definitely am inspired by stand up for sure. One of those Sundays, Dave Chappelle came back. This was after he had the supposed meltdown. Don't believe the hype. But anyway, he came, did a 5-hour set, man.
Oh my God, it was
absolutely ridiculous. And like when I say he came on stage and got like this standing ovation, it was amazing. It was amazing. Hate the flack that he's getting right now.
Yeah.
The man's a genius, but dude, it's like you can't cancel one of the greatest, man. You can't cancel. His fan base is too big.
I know you did work with a lot of different comedians as well. Like you worked with like Robin Williams, Kevin Hart. What was that like working with them? Were you just like trying to make them laugh, or are they just always making you laugh? Like it has to be a lot of fun just hanging out with those guys.
I want to say both situations were kind of different. I'm not going to say they were terrible. It was an honor in working with both of them. First off, much honor. Kevin Hart, he came across very hungry though. Like,
okay.
Like he was very, very, like, this was like his young, this was young before Kevin Hart became Kevin Hart, just before he blew up. But what I do admire about Kevin Hart is his drive and determination, you know, that energy to want to succeed. It's kind of like when we were on set, his mind was on what am I going to do after this? Kind of like, I've got things to do. Like, I felt like working with Kevin Hart, he had a list of errands that he had to like run. And this was just one thing he had to just kind of just check off the list. Very funny dude, inspired by. I can listen to Kevin Hart talk all the time about, because he always comes with positive energy. I wish I had had the chance to chop it up and connect with him more. I'm not going to say that was my fault, because I just feel like his head was just in a certain space. And I feel like it was just kind of like, I got to do this. I got to do this. Oh, I got to hit my Instagram real quick. Let me hit up this Facebook real quick and see what's going on here. Like, he was just a busybody. And I didn't want to kind of like step on his toes and be like, hey, man, like, forget what you're talking about and do what you're doing. I just want to chop it up. I just kind of would left him in his own world. All respect. I see that you're very driven and I respect his drive. You know what I mean? Robin Williams was an honor to meet. You can tell Robin Williams definitely, I don't know. I want to watch my words. I don't want to say troubled.
Okay.
But, you know, he was definitely in a very stoic, very just kind of, and I feel like Jim Carrey's probably the same way. I feel Martin Lawrence the same way. I remember very quickly meeting Martin Lawrence in Shreveport. When we were in Shreveport doing The Great Debaters, Martin Lawrence was in Shreveport, Louisiana, filming Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Okay.
It's always been my dream to meet him, and I met him for like literally half a second. It was just kind of like high bye. But even just seeing him in his presence, very straight face, serious person. It's not like the silly guy you see on TV at all. Robin Williams the same way. And it's weird. I feel like Robin Williams knows how to push that button on who to talk to and how to talk to him. And then he'll get back to where he's at. So it's kind of like, he'll sit there and somebody will come to him. Hey, how you doing? And it's like, it kind of like he puts it on for a quick second, amuse you to let you know that I'm connecting with you. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable because of how I'm feeling right now, but I am personable. He's a very personal person when you talk to him. But then when he's by himself, he's just kind of like,
I heard he's dealing with depression and all that too. So
yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't want to put that label on him. I just know people suffer with things. You may not know what people are going through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when action was called, the man was a complete genius.
Did he have similar energy as like Denzel Washington for you? Like, did he seem like similar in that, like that caliber, or was he just a whole different caliber?
Denzel Washington was just all about his business. Mm-hmm. When I tell you, whenever he steps on a set, it's all business. No fun and games. I want you to be as professional as you are. Mm-hmm. I'm professional. If I'm being professional on this set, you have to exude the same energy. He is just, he's about pure focus and business. That's it. And you respect that.
Yeah.
Because of the caliber of an actor that he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw him, yo, I saw him like tear a PA's butt off, bro. Like, it was bad. Somebody called cut before he called cut, and it was done dilly. he was training day Denzel.
Oh man.
It was bad. It was like, man, hey.
Do you know if there are any hot mics on the set while that was happening?
I'm not sure. But I mean, I saw him chew out a PA and one of the actors. Because they was playing around and he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I was a PA, he would have made me cry. Like, I would just 100% cry.
Yeah,
like,
you would probably quit right there on
yeah,
the spot.
Yeah, just done.
Yeah, man. No playing around with Denzel. Not saying he's scary, but at the same time, it's, you know what you're in for with the type of role that you're taking on and the type of film that you're taking on. And you see the levels of film that he does. You know what I mean? So if you come in the set and you're not focused or you don't know your lines and you're not being a professional, he'll call you out. I just recently heard the lady from Grey's Anatomy cuss him out. Y'all hear about that?
No.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah,
that.
Apparently he directed one of the Grey's Anatomy episodes, and she cussed him out on set.
Oh, man. Is there a recording of it?
I don't know if it's a recording, but it definitely...
I want to hear this. I love hearing like...
Oh, like the Christian Bale joint.
The Christian Bale one. And then Tom Cruise had one recently over the pandemic, too. That's
hilarious.
It's fun, yeah, to listen too.
Yeah, those are fun to listen to. But I definitely would have heard that one. I think Denzel kept his composure and just kind of like let her go off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of just on some like, I'm not going to make myself look bad and cuss out, chew out this woman at the time. So I think he was able to kind of keep his composure. So
yes,
I'd be even more afraid if he's like just quiet and not saying a word. It's that scarier.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the thing is, it's like if you got like a, if it's like your time to shine and the close ups on you, you know, he'll probably, he has the power to mess with you. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? They can be like, no, we don't like that. Do it again. This is a 5-page monologue. I don't care. Do it again. Yeah.
All right.
Jermaine, I know we've kept you a little longer than you wanted to stay for, and we do appreciate talking to you tonight.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
This was fun, man. This is definitely fun. Please have me back again.
Oh, I'd love to. Definitely.
Yeah.
We usually ask one last question, though. Any words of wisdom for anyone that wants to get into acting or become an actor that you wish you would have had when you first started out?
If you are starting out, don't quit, because you'll wind up doing something that you probably don't want to do in life, and you'll be miserable. I've been there. I've literally have asked myself 2 or 3 different times and considered quitting. And I've taken breaks, but something always brings me back to it. So if there's a real true passion for the industry, acting, or even outside of acting, if it's writing, if you want to produce, there's so many lanes in this industry, you know what I'm saying, that you can probably find yourself accomplishing it, whether it's pre-production, post-production, editing, cinematography. If it's something that you love, stick with it. Because at the end of the day, you do not want to wind up doing something that will make you miserable. I promise you. So that's my words of wisdom. Please stick with it. Don't give up. You are who you are. See yourself and always keep God first. Period.
That's awesome.
Jermaine, we really appreciate talking to you tonight.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Absolutely. This was fun.
Anything you want to plug? Any social media?
Yeah. Follow me, man. Hit me up on Instagram. I'm pretty active on Instagram. Instagram is RealJermaine_Williams. That's Real, R-E-A-L, Jermaine_Williams on Instagram. You'll find me. And I like to follow back. So it's all good.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot for coming on, man.
We really appreciate talking to you tonight, man. You're cool as hell.
Yeah.
Hey, absolutely, man. Have me back, guys. Y'all was cool as hell, too.
Definitely, man.
All right. I'll talk to you later, man. Have a great night.
Hey, have a good night, bro.
Have a good one.
Yeah, no, he was really fun to talk to and all.
Yeah, it was great, man.
I'm glad he gave us more time and all. Like, I always appreciate that. I mean,
yeah, it seemed like he was having a good time, so he stuck around.
Yeah, always makes me feel good.
Yeah, it does. It does. It makes me feel good too. I need to keep drinking coffee. I didn't have coffee tonight. I felt like I could have done a little bit better.
Okay.
But I stopped drinking coffee because my Sunday's screwed up. Like, because every night we do these, like, I just stay up all night. And then, so it's a give or take, like, do it. I don't know. But yeah, you know, I really enjoyed talking to him. Like, I've seen him in all kinds of things, like, throughout our lives. And it's cool to get to talk to him. He's a cool guy. He's humble.
Yeah. I like the thing he started as like a child actor, and then he was able to like demonstrate that he's more than a child actor and like not just a Disney kid, because like that's like a trope and all, where like people just kind of fall into that and then they can't find work because they always see him as like a kid actor and then they just kind of get out of the industry because of it. And I'm glad he was able to like, no, I'm an adult, I want to do more serious stuff, and then like progress from there.
Yeah, we see this all the time too, that like people that kind of fall in love with the work, you know, they're able to like rise to a different level and they're focused on the right things. It's, you know, regardless of where they get, actually, like they're able to live a fulfilling career, you know?
Yeah. Like he's worked with such awesome talent. Like his words about Denzel, like that's so awesome. Cause like, he's such a massive actor, like just of that caliber. It's like one of the best actors you can work with in our time and all that. And it's awesome that he had that experience with him, and he imprinted so much on him, like sharing like his stories, like, hey, this is like some knowledge drop on him and stuff. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to hear that he's really into mentoring people.
Yeah, because you hear like other like shitty stories, like people are just like, no, fuck off, kid. Like,
yeah.
Or like he was like, he wanted to help them and all that. That's awesome. A little disappointed about the Robin Williams stuff. I knew he was going through it a lot.
Well, it's tough to hear. It's tough to hear that he was like kind of depressed. You know, I mean, everybody knows he's kind of having trouble. I know the Louis body dementia was what seemed to be what got him in the end, but it was still sad to like hear like a dude that's brought so much joy to everybody like can't find it in his own life. It's the same thing with Bourdain. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it's such a fucking like tragic cosmic joke, you know, that these people can give such an amazing experience to everybody, but they can't find it in their own life.
Yeah, it is definitely,
it's fucking bleak. It's a tragic joke, tragic cosmic joke.
No, Jermaine was really cool and all. Like, I like that he really digs the dramatic stuff and all, since he has such a comedic background. And I'm really excited for him, to do like stand up type stuff. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. That'd be cool. I liked hearing about the, you know, I've heard about Chappelle's like epic like 5 hour sets. There's actually one on YouTube. I don't know if it's still going to be there, but there's like a 3 hour set that he did. Like somebody recorded.
What the fuck do you like just like talk for like 3 hours or like five hours? That's epic. No. Just, I mean, like, yeah, Chappelle, oh, yeah, yeah. Doing a Chappelle. Like I'm just, well, like, from my mindset, I don't even like doing anything for like 5 hours.
that's what he does, man. He's
I can see him smoking like three packs of cigarettes and just talking for hours. That's awesome.
Yeah, you go. Here's an idea. All that stuff. Good, man.
I'm glad this worked out tonight. It was awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
I mean, especially like Netflix, they kind of embrace like everything. Like they put out shows and movies for every culture, every type of person. Like they're very diverse and all. And
it's really easy to take comedy out of context too. Like, you know, if somebody didn't watch the special and they just see some things written down, you know, it's like it's easy to not get the first,
even like the surface level. Like, yeah. Like if you're only like reading like the surface level, you're not seeing like the entire thing. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, it's easy to just pick out words, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's easy to pick out words and edit certain things and be like, well, he said this, and that's partial of the joke. That's mm-hmm. partial of the joke. You got to literally play out the full joke. And there is a thing as hate speech in doing comedy. You know, I feel like there is a such thing as that. But Dave doesn't do that. He doesn't promote violence. He doesn't promote beating up anybody, different race or culture or sexual orientation. He doesn't talk about any of that. He literally is just telling jokes, and he does it from a perspective of how he sees it. And he takes full ownership of not understanding. Okay, if you don't understand something. And the simple fact that you can acknowledge that and be like, hey, I'm open to trying to understand some of the things that I see is a bit foreign for me. Just like on the other side, certain things may be foreign to them, but you have to just be able to take ownership of that and empathize. I feel like his special was extremely funny, and he is edgy, but at the end of the day, he's very empathetic. He turns it back around to like at the end of almost every joke, and he's empathetic.